I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. So today on the podcast, the one and only A Vision. I came across him a while ago. However, in the last like 2 years, his music's just been like really shouting out at me, and I'm absolutely loving everything he's putting out. I got in touch with him on Instagram a while back, and we've just been talking. He's a great producer, also loves cooking pizza and has like a pizza business as well, which is fucking dope. So we kind of get on really well and talk about all things food as well. I wanted to get him on the podcast and talk about his life and what he does and his process, and we just had a really, really good conversation. Proper love this guy. He's going to be doing some seriously big things over the years as well. I've got a lot of hopes for him. So without further ado, A Vision. And we are live. A Vision, how's it going, man?
Audio's good on my side. We're good.
Yeah, I think you're good. It's like Zoom, so it's not going to be perfect. But hey, we'll roll with it. How's life in New York, man?
It's good. So I live about in 45 minutes to an hour from the city. I'm in New Jersey. Originally, I'm from Staten Island, New York. And yeah, man, it's nice right now. You know, things are opened up. Life is starting to happen. Clubs are starting to open back up. So, you know, it's taking it day by day right now.
Back on it, man. It's so nice to see. It's like fucking about time, right?
Oh, dude, you have no idea, man. It was rough over here for a little bit. Mm. Like the first, like last March, I was like, I didn't want to believe it. I was just like, yeah, we're going to get out of this in 2 weeks, whatever. Miami Music Week is canceled. Fuck it, whatever. It's all good. And then I was like, oh, this is not a 2 week thing at all.
No, man, I totally agree. It was like, I think I was like, I just finished my tour in March. I was super lucky.
You were over here, right? Yeah. You came, you were in LA. I remember that.
I did like a whole tour, and
yeah,
I was like, because I live in Detroit usually. Oh, I lost you. That's never happened to me on like where someone just like just fucking goes.
It just dropped right out. I was like, what the fuck was that? My screen went black and everything.
It's what we call an Irish goodbye. I don't know if you use that saying in the States.
Yeah, no, we do. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, classic. It's the best way to go. No one ever realizes you've gone anyway.
Until they go to give you a shot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I actually saw a meme yesterday. and it was like, it wasn't a meme. It was just like, you know, like one of those inspirational quote pages on Instagram. And it was like, nobody cares if you don't go to the club.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's actually so true.
Yeah, it is, man. You're definitely not missed.
Yeah, it's wild. But come to our shows because we need to make money.
Yeah, man, exactly.
But yeah.
We're playing soon together. What is it, July 10th?
July
10th. LA? Yeah, it's going to be a good.
I don't think it's been announced yet. It hasn't.
We're debuting.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. How was your Mexico trip?
Oh, dude, Mexico was sick, man.
Yeah.
Like, that was my first time in like outside of like, you know, like Tulum and Playa del Carmen and Cancun. So like being there in like the city, Mexico City, and then Guadalajara was phenomenal. Mm. It was a great crowd. I would say like Mexico City was definitely more of like a high end crowd. Mm. Like you could tell like there was some real money in that club. Yeah. And Guadalajara was just, it was dope. Really good night. We started off in Guadalajara, then Mexico City. But that was a, you know, to jump back on tour real quick like that and like haven't had a run. So it was Guadalajara, Mexico City, then Vegas. And it was all back to back to back.
Yeah.
So like we left Guadalajara. My flight was like right after the club. I went straight to Mexico City and then I ended up falling asleep at the hotel in the pool. I got all sunburned.
Oh, no.
But I was all right. And then Mexico City, straight from the club to Vegas. And then I was on pretty early. I think I was on at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in Vegas. So like by the time I got settled in, it was like 2 o'clock and ate something, prepped my set, went to the stage. And then that was it.
Yeah, quick, man.
I was like, damn, that was so quick. I didn't even get to like suck that shit in.
Yeah, you were like thrown in at the deep end straight away. That's kind of how I feel.
Crazy.
I'm like about to announce a tour. And literally Ryan, my manager, and I, we were like 2 months ago, we were like, yeah, we don't know if we're going to be touring this year at all. And then literally like 3 weeks ago, my agents were like, here's a tour. Here's like a 22-day tour.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm working again. And I'm been thrown in at the deep end. But
all back to back to back, or you're coming in and out?
I'm not allowed in and out because of the fucking visas.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dude, it's so messed up right now. So
yeah, a lot of people are having trouble getting visas right now.
Yeah, so what's happened, I don't know, this might not be interesting for anyone listening, but I'm going to say it, so fuck it. Yeah. So we have, being a British citizen, traveling to the America, we have to get an O-1 visa.
Okay.
Luckily, my O-1 runs out in August.
Okay.
However, that means if I go into America before August, I can stay, okay? But
okay.
I've been approved for my renewal for my visa. Right. However, the embassies have cancelled all appointments for O-1 visas up until October.
Oh, my God.
So, first of all, I have to go in the States via Mexico. So I have to go to Mexico for 2 weeks before I'm allowed in the States. Because there's a travel ban on British citizens to America.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's more political. But then once I'm in America, because there's no embassy appointments, I'm not allowed to leave America until I know that I can have an embassy appointment.
So you don't know when you're going to come home.
I don't know when I'm coming back to England. We're hoping it's September because I've got shows in Europe in September. I've actually had to cancel one of my shows in the UK in August because it's just...
Are both of your shows in the UK for Europe?
I got one in the UK, one in Malta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, because like Europe's a very touchy subject right now. It's like some spots are open, some spots are really...
closed. Well, France is just closed to the UK again, and so is Germany. And you're just like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like... I don't know. Is Italy back open too?
I don't know.
I know Amsterdam's going to happen in October. That's what they're hoping. Mm. I don't think I'm going to be able to break to Europe until like Amsterdam, which I'm hoping that's the start of like
European
everything going back to Europe as well. I love Europe. I love playing there too. It's like, it's the best.
I was going to say, do you play more over here than in the States?
So like the last 2 years, we were focusing more Europe than the States. I feel like as an artist from the States, it's important to go overseas and do your thing. So like the plan, like 2 summers ago, I was in Ibiza and I was in Italy with my family and I was doing the run. I did like Barcelona, I did Madrid, I did everything over there. And the main goal from my side of the team was like, let's hit Europe hard. Let's go in. And, you know, it was starting to happen. And then sure enough, after that summer, came home, played the States a little bit, like LA, played Miami, and New York, and then March came around and that was it. Like I was in February, I was in Madrid, Canada, and then I came home, went to the Bahamas with my girlfriend, and after that week, everything shut down.
That's wild.
And it was supposed to be like a sick weekend in Miami, and then that was it. And then
here we are.
Here we are.
Here, you're in your spare bedroom.
Yeah. So, I mean, my main focus was hitting Europe pretty hard just because my music, I feel like, is definitely more driven like to like the UK and stuff like that. Because I like got working with guys like Ben Sims and I did stuff for Eats Everything and those guys. I mean, they have a huge fan base over there. So it's like, I feel like the UK would get my sound a lot more. But yeah, man, I love playing in Europe. I think there's something about it that's just special, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's different as well. Being American, it's like getting out of America is sometimes
Like every American artist every American artist that breaks out of the States, that's when you become a real deal artist. Like once you can leave the States and then come back home and do what you do, that's when it's like, oh fuck, I got something, I made it here.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because I think in Europe it's not even like that. Like if you're big in, like for me, I'm bigger in the States than I am in Europe, and just because I'm big in the States, it doesn't mean I do well in Europe at all.
See, I feel like it used to be like that here.
Yeah.
Like for instance, New York alone, just New York, DJs used to make a living off of residencies, doing remixes right from New York.
Yeah.
You know, like my cousin, Victor Calderon, he had a residency.
Yeah.
He was, he used to be at, The Roxy. He was he used to do one-offs at the Limelight, and then Crowbar was like his big residency. And like, dude, these guys were getting paid week to week.
Yeah.
This was their set time. Vic would go on from 5 a.m. on Sunday morning and play till, you know, almost Monday morning. Mm. And that's just how it went.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to really think too much outside of that. It was like, yeah, I'll go play in Paris. Yeah, I'll go play here. But like your bread and butter was your residencies. And that's how I feel like it should kind of go back to. Like I wish, like right now is a perfect time for a kid like me to start a residency in New York.
I agree.
Because number one, travel restrictions. You can't really go too far. You can't, you know, the market and the territories right now, it's like almost kind of, it's hard to route a serious tour because things are just starting to get lifted. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's things are just starting to get picked up. So like right now is a great time. It's just, there's no rooms in New York right now. There really isn't. There's
New York's
no
a strange one, isn't it? Because it's so strange.
It's the weirdest thing to me.
It's got such a great history on parties and kind of venues and things like that. But yeah, don't get me wrong. There's some great venues in New York.
Yeah, Mirage, you got all the tech support parties. That's the main guys that I play with a lot. Those two, tech support and the Brooklyn Mirage are the main guys.
But it's not like it used to be, which is strange. No. And I don't know why.
Yeah. We used to have like, I don't know if you caught, do you ever catch Pasha?
Yeah.
Yeah, Pasha was a great club. I mean, everyone, like, when you were from New York, everyone used to complain about Pasha just because it was like, it was Pasha. Mm. And like, everyone was getting over it. But now, more than ever, everyone misses it.
Yeah.
You know, it was the last true, like, big room nightclub in New York. Then we had Space, which was a sick room.
It was a phenomenal room. How long did that last? Like, a year and a half?
It lasted, I want to say, like, 2 years, maybe. But, like, the room stayed open. Mm. Like, it was just a bunch of different people involved. It was too many people involved, honestly.
Output.
Yeah, like, Output. That's one that I'm still upset about. I think that was a phenomenal club. Yeah. I would have loved it. I wish, like, the top floor was a little wider, like, a little spread out more. Yeah. But I thought that room was awesome.
I only played the side room. I played the side room before.
The Panther room. I thought that room was better than the main room. Yeah, I agree. That was such a good vibe. Like the Panther room, we would throw my birthday party there every year. Mm. And we would pack that bitch out. It was awesome, dude. Such a good vibe. And like, it was just a good night to play whatever the fuck you want and just do whatever you want. And the club was about it. And what I liked about the club was like, you could breed talent through that club. Like you could start a night in the Panther room and then take that to the main room.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, New York's in a weird place right now. I feel like because the city, everyone moved out of the city. Like right now, real estate in my area is going through the roof.
Oh, really?
Oh, people are getting $70,000 over asking price, you know, like that's it's mad. Insane. Yeah. For a guy like me, that's trying to buy a house. It sucks.
It's cheaper in the city though.
It's still not cheap. It's expensive
compared
still,
to what it was.
It's cheaper. It's cheaper than it used to be. Mm. But not to buy so much, to rent is cheaper right now. Like rents are going cheap, but I feel like within a year, man, that's gonna go right back. Yeah. It's gonna go right back to where it was because the people that moved out of the city are going to eventually want to go back into the city. But I hope this opens up a gap for like someone that's got balls to open up a club, you know?
I think the issue with New York is that because everyone's so on top of each other, you kind of have like a cool spot. Output is a classic example for it.
Yeah.
You have a really cool spot in not so cool of a neighborhood. And then the neighborhood gets cool. And it's because of the club. The club brings people like, oh, I like this area. And it brings restaurants, it brings in amenities. And I think that's the real issue is that
it's true.
Like the William Vale, the Williamsburg Hotel. What's the hotel opposite Output?
The Williamsburg Hotel. That's right across the street.
Yeah. And you got the Hoxton as well. And you're just like, you can't build hotels next to a club. You're going to get complaints.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but it's New York. It's like, that's the shit that New York does. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's weird because that building that Output was in is now an event space, like for weddings and stuff like that. And I think that once that lease is up, it's going to be turning into like residential.
Yeah.
But like, for instance, like where the Brooklyn Mirage is at, it's like the borderline of Ridgewood, Queens, and Williamsburg. So it's like there's nothing that's going to be turned into residential over there because it's all like garbage trucks and like all like commercial, like construction stuff over there. So like they kind of lucked out. They'll never get a noise ordinance. They own that whole block.
Yeah. It's the most perfect place.
Yeah. It's like insane. But like, not that I love that venue. I think it's a sick venue. There's something about playing a club. Mm. Like when you play like Stereo in Montreal, like that's a true club. That's a nightclub.
I've never played there. I'm not cool enough.
Dude.
I'm not cool enough yet.
Wait until you play there, man. Phenomenal room.
See, New York though, like Red Room. I played Red Room on my last tour.
Nice.
And Honestly, that was like the first time in a long time where I'm like, this feels like a good grimy club from back in the day.
Like that's that. I love that. Like that's how I grew up playing. Like I played in clubs. I didn't play in festival settings. Playing a festival is almost like it's fun to play a festival, obviously, but I can go through 8 hours easier than 1 hour.
Yeah,
like as a DJ, like I, these hour sets are just
shit.
You're programming fast, like it's just I can't get what you want out of it in an hour or 2 hours even. I feel like after my 2 hour mark, I'm just getting started. I'm just getting comfortable. You know, like I'm just starting to feel everything out. So
I think this is an American thing, though. Like I've spoken about this a bunch of times on the podcast, and this is why the last tour I did was like an open to close tour. Because it was just like people like I want to enjoy myself, and I don't get me wrong, I love DJing, but my festival sets are so different to my club sets.
Oh yeah.
And I just want to be able to like play music for a long time and also give people the different types of music that you get in a long set.
Yeah, for sure. Give you like you're giving them the artist that you are in a longer set. Good program. Because certain tracks and really go through the journey like that. That's what I've learned as being from New York. I've had some really great role models and guys to look at. And it was always about the ups and downs and going in different directions and not just playing techno and mixing in house and a deep house record. Like there's just so many avenues you can go in. That's why like, everyone labels me as a techno artist, and I feel like I'm not just a techno artist at all. Like I don't just make techno. I'd actually lose my shit if I just made techno. I can't.
Totally agree.
Don't get me wrong. I'm a fan. I love techno. That's my heart. But I just feel like as an artist, you have so much more to offer than just being a one note. Producer or a one note DJ. And
this is why I actually love your music. I've known of you for a like good amount of time, but over the last year or so, I'm like, damn, your music's just on another level in that genre. And I was just listening to your new EP at the moment. And it's not like, it's just like, this is the thing that pisses me off of genres. Is that it's just fucking great house music.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing is like in your music, I can hear lots of influences from like back in the day, but also like, it's just so well done and it just sounds amazing, but also works. Not that I have played your new stuff on a dance floor, but I can imagine it just working on a dance floor really well.
Yeah. And I like to make dance floor music. I don't like to, don't get me wrong. I like to make different stuff, but like when I'm making music, I always think of how this is going to go on a dance floor.
Yeah.
How can I make a crowd react a certain way and make them feel a certain emotion? And that's what it's about, I think. But yeah, there's a lot of influence in my music. And honestly, I don't know what triggers certain things. I like every artist, like you just go into it and you just make music. But I always try to keep a balance. I don't like to go too hard. I don't like to go too soft. Mm. And I like creating that balance where it's like you can dance to it rather than just throw your hands up, you know? Because now, in especially in techno, everything's about that drop, right? That
well, it's EDM, isn't it? And I don't – this techno people are going to be pissed off with me saying this. But even like even my last record with – Oliver Heldens, the Hilo record, that's like that was purely made for one reason, and it's more of an EDM record than a techno record,
which is cool, man. Like I have records like that too. Like it's all good. There's a purpose for everything,
of course.
But I feel like things are starting to turn. We'll see, you know what I mean? I think music will definitely take a different direction. And it's all about the big guys in the industry too, you know, and how they make their fans perceive the music as well. You know, like once they start going in a certain direction, you start seeing the fans go into that direction. Yeah. And then you never know what the next wave of the sound is, you know? Mm. So to me, I always just stick to what I do and just keep it on, just keep on going.
You know? I think that's the important thing though, isn't it? About just doing what you do and not kind of following sounds and yeah, kind of what's fashionable, because especially at this, well, we had it with Tech House over the last like 5 years and like, exactly. And the thing is, if everyone knew what real Tech House was, it would, everyone would be like, yes, I fucking love Tech House. But because of 5 to 10 records that were absolutely huge in the Tech House kind of genre, it's made a lot of artists and a lot of new artists have gone like, I want instant success. I want that instant gratification that those people are getting. So I'm just going to make a copy, a carbon copy of that record. And it's the same in the techno world at this moment in time. It's like, I get it. You've got a big kick drum.
Yeah.
What else are you bringing to the table? Like, and I think that's the thing. It's fashion, right? It's the same with New York Yankee hats, if you know what I mean. Like, it goes round and round in circles. And
it's weird because I used to like love Tech House, and there's still a few Tech House records that I'll still rock, but they're older, and I never got like the whole point of Tech House, like the genre itself. I get it. It's pretty much house. You know, it's a little bit beefier house. Yeah. That's what it is. It's just chunked up. But the genre has become very commercialized.
Yeah.
Right now, and it's kind of crazy. Like I think it's a healthy thing. It's not a bad thing. It just opens up avenues for other artists to get into something that they've never gotten into before, which is in certain standpoints it's whack, and certain standpoints it's a good thing. You know, I like we said before, put your head down and just keep on doing what you do, and it is what it is, you know.
Yeah, I think
the more attention to what we do is a great thing regardless.
Totally. I think commercialization is actually a really fucking good thing,
because it means
we can pay our mortgages and we can kind of get food on the table. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of artists talk about being underground, and it's like, well, none of us are underground if you got a fucking Instagram page. Like,
it's true, man. Like, and that's another thing that drives me crazy, like the techno snob thing. I'm just like, yo, fuck, like, there's no reason to be a techno snob. There really isn't.
I think it's just ego.
Yeah, I mean, like, but what sets that? Like, what makes you, like, the purest? You know what I mean?
Nothing.
You're not Jeff Mills.
He's not even a snob.
Yeah, if you're not Jeff Mills, then shut up. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like it. Just like to run their mouth, but no. For me, even playing, like I like to keep to like the pure forms of things. Like I like to, if I'm gonna play techno, I play techno, and if I'm gonna play house, I'm gonna play house.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna play that. Like, I'm not gonna play anything commercial. That I don't have in me. Like to play something too commercial. And even when I'm playing like a festival or anything like that, I will still try to do my thing without playing like that one hit. You know what I mean? Like, granted, like fans might want that one hit, or they might, but someone's going to play that hit. You know what I mean? So I want to completely change that up where it's like, I'm not playing anything else that anyone else is going to play.
Would you want that one hit yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the one hit. No, I mean, bro, we all want that one hit. I won't be the artist, though, that plays that one hit, like, 4 years after I made it.
Yeah.
It's just like, I made that already. That shit's over with.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's a lot of guys that, like, I remember I was playing in Spain, and someone asked me to play my Suar release. And I only released it, like, I released it within that month, but like, because I played that release so much more before I released it, I was over it already. You know what I mean? Like, I was on to like the next batch of records I made. And I saw someone hold up the artwork on their phone. I was like, all right, I'll fucking play it. I was like, I was like, whatever.
Yeah, it's rough good. That I'm sure you've got plenty of records like that. I can definitely relate where like it's bad though. It's not bad, but I think there's another side of the story is like,
yeah,
we don't go see the Rolling Stones play for them to play Bob Marley records.
No, you're right.
So there's like, and that's the thing. I did a lot of touring with MK a few years ago. And he's like a good homie of mine, but that's the one thing I learned from him, from his shows.
Yeah.
Especially his like big shows where there's like 10,000 people. Like he's literally just playing like a band almost.
Yeah.
And really,
he's got commercial hits.
Yeah.
So serious. Like you got to put him in the same frame as, I mean, it's not as big as Rolling Stones or something like that, but I mean, he's considered going to see a concert.
Calvin Harris, MK, Duke DuMont.
I was talking to Calvin Harris over quarantine.
Yeah.
And we were bullshitting, you know, we were talking about his Love Generator stuff. And he was telling me how sick he was, like, over playing, like, his own records. He was just so over it. And I was like, damn, like, I get it. He was just overplaying, like, all of his commercial shit.
Yeah.
And, bro, I mean, God bless him. I think he's one of the best producers of our generation. Like, he's a phenomenal producer.
100%.
And I definitely, like, I feel for someone like that because, like, they've gotten so commercial that now he's trying to go, not trying, he's going more underground and he's loving what he's doing and he doesn't give a fuck about, like, what anyone's got to say, which is a great problem to have.
How amazing is that position to be in?
Yeah, it's just like, fuck you, I'm going to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's tired of like all the big label shit and all that stuff. Like, you know, when they demand records out of you and you don't want to push out like that type of record and stuff. It's probably a lot to deal with. Don't get me wrong. My goal at the end of the day is to go out there and try and win a Grammy one day and produce a pop artist and stuff like that while I'm still doing the underground shit. That like that's where I've always had that goal and I've always had that dream. So like a guy like Calvin Harris is a perfect example of like, wow, like that's legit shit, man. Like that guy's won tons of Grammys. I mean, he's written some of the best dance records
ever
in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when you talk to him, he's a super cool dude.
It's chill.
Super cool dude.
Super chill. I guess the thing is when you're that successful, you have nothing to prove.
Yeah.
You have no one to prove anything to. You don't need to.
You've made your money. You've made the records you need to make. And now it's just like, I'm going to focus on what I really like to make.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I liked his Love Generator stuff. I think it was cool change up to see him doing something different.
I think everyone should be able to do something different. But I think what happens in the kind of circles that we work in is that it goes back to that snobbery is that you actually, like, you do one record and they love it, and the next record, because it doesn't sound like the last record, it's like, well, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, I guess. You're right. It's you win some, you lose some.
This is why I started my own label, because I was like, I can't be doing with trying to make music that fits other people's sounds.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I'll definitely do my own thing eventually with a label. I think a label is a great outlet to just express as an artist who you are and what you, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a big responsibility. I feel like there's two ways to go about a label, and it's either you go in hard or you just go in just to release your own music.
Yeah.
And that's cool too. You know what I mean? Either option's cool. But for me, I definitely one day I'll start something. Once I feel like the time is right. You know what I mean? I feel like I definitely built my own sound and I'm cool with it. And I love doing that. And I definitely would love a label that could, you know, have other artists to do the same thing. You know what I mean? It'd be cool to have that and have a team and everything like that. But when the time is right, I'm all about timing. Everything needs to fit the right time frame.
It has to be the right time, because otherwise, if you do it too early, it kind of weakens the whole brand. If you come out when you're like you're about to peak, it's more things to talk about. And the only reason why I did it was because I wanted to control my release schedule and control touring around that and release music that people don't want to release.
No, it's true, man. Like, the whole release schedule thing is such a fucking up and down swing. Like, we're planning my album coming out on Elm, and we're waiting for like one vocal clearance and stuff like that. And I don't have a date to you know, start planning things, which is, it's not on us and it's not on Elm either. Like, it's just how things go sometimes. But yeah, I blocked out like the end of my summer for this album. And I have one more EP coming out on Truncate before the album. Mm. So it's like, if the album gets pushed back, then I have another like few months without records. So then like I could always throw like a Bandcamp up, or I could do something just to say thanks to like people listening. But like, I'm very on top of my schedule. Like, 2022 is already like, like, I'm done. Like, I don't have any more. Not that I don't have more music. I always have music, but I don't have any
space
or slots. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't want to over release, because I feel like the last 2 years of my releases were like one on top of the other. And it's like, fuck, I hate that. Like, I don't want to have a remix out when I have my EP out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like how things happen sometimes. And every label, you know, you're dealing with certain labels that have to push this out, and you're dealing with guys that have to push things back. And it's sometimes a mess, you know.
It's frustrating. But, so frustrating.
Yeah, super frustrating. But and then sometimes like you want to be a dick and be like, no, I can't release it then. But then when you realize who you're working with, you're like, fuck, we got to do it.
Yeah.
It's just what it is.
Yeah, I'm in that predicament. I'm in that predicament at the moment. I've got a remix coming out, or I did the remix last year and they were like, oh, we're going to shelve all the remixes for this album of this artist. And we're like, okay, cool. They paid us. But it was like, I wanted the remix to come out. And so we planned this whole year out, and now I've got that. They reached out to us like 2 weeks ago. And we're like, oh, we're putting it out in this month. And I was like, we can't do it. Yeah. Like, it's going to fuck two of my releases up.
Damn.
And I'm just like, we just can't do it, people.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But sometimes you just got to roll with it.
No, it's true. It's better to put it out than not put it out sometimes. But like, I'm a big planner and I like to have the assets for everything, like, especially now, like Instagram and all that shit, man, that we have to focus on. It's just as important as the music now.
If not more.
Like, I feel like
it's fucked.
I need to start like fucking posting myself swimming in a pool now. I need to post stuff that's like completely not music related, because anything that's not music related now just gets views and gets, you know, reposts. And it's just like, I guess people want to see your life outside of what you do too, which is weird, but like, yeah, they're interested in that stuff.
I think we're not just DJs anymore, and we're not just producers. And
it's, it's fucking frustrating. It's a lot to stay on top.
Do you struggle with it?
Not that I struggle with it. We have content. We have everything. My thing is like, what's going to set me apart? You know what I mean? What's setting me apart? Everyone's going to post a dope picture behind the DJ booth.
Yeah.
Bro, we're all DJs. Most DJs like to cook. I like making pizza. You're always cooking shit. I see you cooking all the time.
Yeah.
We all like to cook. Cool. Right. All right. There's two DJs right now. We're talking. We both like to cook.
Yeah.
What sets you apart from me and you cooking? You know what I mean? Like, Will Clark's cooking, Anthony's cooking. It's like, I just saw that on my feed. Yeah. Like, what is everyone? You know, I don't know. It's just kind of like, why can't it just be about the music? Like, it is what it is. I'm not going to hate on it, social media at all, because I think every artist has their perks to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's how far you want to push it. And there's no limits with that. Instagram has been probably one of the main reasons why I was able to get in touch with DJs that I thought I couldn't get in touch with on email. So like a lot of relationships started from Instagram or social media. So I'm not going to complain about it, but I do think it's become oversaturated and there's a lot of bullshit that gets posted from other artists that I just feel like it's like, dude, this is so corny.
Do you know what annoys me the most?
Go for it.
Private jets photos.
Yeah.
Have you got one? Because we're stopping this.
I don't have one. I don't. We almost took one from Mexico City, though.
I don't care about people taking them. I'm all for people taking them.
Don't fuck with that, honestly.
But don't take a photo and put it on Instagram. That's my only thing.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. My thing is like the coyness, like playing a vinyl and smiling into the camera and like, or like me drinking my morning water, my morning coffee and just like posting that on Instagram. I'm like, yo, are you fucking kidding me? That got 400,000 views. What? Do I need to like, I'm going to just start taking my shirt off and rubbing my nipples. Like, what's good? Like,
dude,
this is terrible.
You'll sell more tickets if you did that. That's a sad thing.
Bro, I've come to realize if I really show like who I am personality wise on social media and like just completely joke around and make fun of myself and do all that, I'd probably blow up like just like that. But like, it's just not who I am. Like, I can't fake it like that. I just can't. Like, there's a lot of bullshit on social media with our industry too. You know,
100%.
Oh, dude, it's endless. Like, you see these techno pages. They just post pictures of women and all this stuff, and it's just like, dude, this is stupid. Like, this is what it's become. This is not what it's about at all. When I was in Mexico, Mexico City put stickers on people's phones.
Mm.
So they couldn't take pictures or anything. And I was like, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Like, I didn't see one flashing light on my eyeballs that night. Yeah, that's great.
Amazing.
But yeah, I think there's advantages and there's just things that like people don't see on Instagram. Like you could fake it until you make it all you want on Instagram and that could start selling tickets. And that's not fair. I feel like to an artist that's buried into the studio, really learning the craft and really honing in on his skills like that. It's totally just bullshit, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it? That being a DJ nowadays isn't necessarily about being able to produce music or being a good DJ. It's about
you can pay someone to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, that's robbery. You know, it's like this industry should almost get treated like sports, right? Like I've played baseball my whole life. And when you're good enough, you make the team, right? Then it's up to you to make the team and then start in the position you want to start in, right? You can't pay someone to make you good.
Yeah.
You have to naturally grow as an athlete.
Mm.
So like it should almost be taken the same way. Like you want your music to be good, you should work on your music. You want, you know, your skills to be good as a DJ, work on your DJing skills. You know, DJing has become a very accessible art form.
Yeah.
These, you know, you can hit a sync button and as long as you can count to four.
You don't even have to nowadays.
You really don't. You know, and like, I think now being a DJ is more about like track selection. Yeah. And knowing how to read a crowd more than anything else.
Totally.
But fuck, man, like it's definitely diluted this industry and the artists that are in this industry. But I'm not one of those guys that will preach over it over and over. To me, like I said before, you just put your head down, you keep working hard. Things will happen when you just keep working hard. And
I think that's the thing is, I think that's what people forget about is that the more work you put into it, the more you'll get out of it eventually. Yeah. And I think there's always that anomaly that somebody has a hit record in their first year and blows the fuck up. But generally those people don't actually last that long in this industry. They have 5 minutes of fame and then it's like, what the fuck happened to them?
Yeah.
And I think the people that actually last a long time. And even for me, like, I technically...
Yeah, you've been in this for a minute, man.
Like, yeah. And,
everything, bro. You've been grinding.
And technically, my career should have been over a long time ago because it's like I've not had a hit record. I've like gone from being... Even before Dirty Bird, I was doing something else then. Still under as Will Clark. I then went through Dirty Bird. I then kind of stopped doing the Dirty Bird stuff and started my own thing.
Yeah.
And like I've kind of had like three careers in one, and
cool. That's what makes you an artist. Yeah, right?
And I think that's the thing is, but I'm happy that I haven't had a hit record right now.
Yeah, what do you consider a hit record though? Like number one on Beatport, or
as much as I love all the guys at Beatport.
Yeah, like, they're great guys.
They're fucking awesome, but I don't think. I would love a Beatport number one. I'm not saying I wouldn't want that, but I think you either have a Beatport, you have a number one on Beatport, or nothing else matters on Beatport. But I think for me, a hit would be it starts with every single DJ playing it.
Yeah.
And then it kind of comes through the underground and then goes into the commercial realm. But
funny, I'm sure we both had almost every DJ playing it.
Yeah.
Like I've had Calvin play my stuff. I've heard Diplo play my stuff. Yeah. And then I've never gotten that commercial driven hit.
I think also a hit comes with, sorry to butt in it, a hit comes with what comes with the hit that is your fees go up. You sell more tickets. You double your ticket sales.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, look at Fish. Let's look at Fisher, right? Yeah. Like,
fuck, that was a hit. That was
exactly
huge.
Camel Fat, Cola. Like, you only have these like once every 5 years.
That crossover sound to it, where it's like the underground's not playing that. So where's the happy medium from the underground to the commercial side?
Tiga Bugatti.
Yes, 100%.
Tiga like Bugatti.
That you got. 100%.
Fatboy Slim back in the day.
He did like Butch, No Worries.
Yeah.
Like that was a complete underground to up the ladder.
Even Detlef. And like, I love Detlef. He's the fucking G. And I know his music kind of goes into that tech house realm, but when he first came out, like that shit was on another level. But I still wouldn't say it was hit. It was like a hit. It was like underground hit. But for me, like, Chemical Brothers, Tiga, Fatboy Slim.
That's like Chemical Brothers was like what, early 2000s ish?
Late 90s, early 2000s.
Like that was a time where you could have an underground hit and it could still reach the commercial side of things. Like dance music as a whole was getting commercial. And it didn't matter if you heard it on the radio. And it didn't matter if you heard it in the club. Mm. Whereas now is if you hear it on the radio, you're not going to hear that shit in the club from us.
Very
you
know rarely.
What I mean? That shit, I'm not playing a Whitney Houston vocal. You know what I mean? Like, but where in the 90s in New York, you would have Whitney Houston show up to the club. You would have Junior Vasquez, who remixed Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
play the remix in the club, and it was underground.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter if Whitney was on it or if she wasn't, but it was still considered underground. Well, like, you had local hits that were underground music.
I think that's the thing that we don't necessarily do in this day and age, in our genre, in our field, is that, like, oh, you put a vocal in a techno record, you're not cool.
I don't get that shit. People category like vocals being whack. I've never, granted, like, not every record I play has a vocal in it, but I think you need to give someone something to remember as well.
That's my
whether it's words, a vocalist singing. You know, on my album, there's a few vocal records on my album, and I wrote everything, and I'm fucking damn proud that there's vocals on it, and I'm really proud that I could show a different side of myself that no one's ever heard.
It's key, you know? Man. It's key.
Yeah, and like, New York is so big on vocals. Mm. Like, we had major vocal hits in New York, and even watching my cousin play through the years, like, he's always playing vocals in his sets. Yeah. Like, I never got why people are like, oh, he's playing vocals. Why?
I love, like, vocals. Like, that's how I started. I started with, like, Frankie Knuckles. Like, that was literally playing Frankie Knuckles, playing old defected 90s records. Like, that was it for me.
Yeah.
Like,
no, like, it's a time, I feel like back then, that was a time where it was a great thing to have true musicians in music, vocalists, real writers writing great hits. It's another reason why I feel like music has gone a little downhill, is just because, like, let's say you're a bass player, I'm a drummer. Yeah. We get into the studio and there's a producer. That producer's telling me what he wants out of me as an artist or a musician to fit the artist's sound. Mm-hmm. And when you have a few badass musicians working together that can play a record and feel with each other, like, there's no better chemistry. Me playing drums, like, I played drums my whole life too, and like, there's no better feeling than playing with other musicians that get it.
Yeah,
like, it's an unmatched feeling. And I feel like we don't get that in music a lot at all anymore. Mm. And that's why you start to see, like, the commercial side of things kind of suck. Like, commercial music is not good anymore. I think the only guy that I truly appreciate his music is, like, Bruno Mars, a kid like that. Like, that's just
good.
Fucking.
Have you heard his new stuff with, what's his name?
Right, Anderson .Paak.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's killer. I can't wait for that album. Yeah. Like, fuck, that shit is just so tight. Like, and he's taking on that soul approach that no one's taken on in a long time, and he's doing it right. He's just crushing it. And, like, that's true musicianship. That's true writer, composition. Like, it's just all really good, well-done music. And I'd like to see that go back into the underground as well. You know, like, you had guys that came in and played piano chords for you or a bass line, and like, that's where it's at, man. Like, you're not going to get a better feel from a musician. Like, you could sequence all you want, but you're not going to get that feel. And I feel like that feel, me as an artist, like, I think that's why my music has made some noise, is just because I'm playing how I want it to feel. I'm not, like, I'll sequence my drums here and there sometimes, but because I'm a drummer, I actually have a hard time sequencing drums.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But even on the other side, like, for guys that do sequence, like for a guy like you, bro, you've had some nice bass lines and some really good drum grooves. And, like, I don't know, do you play?
I play the keys a bit, but I don't drum.
Even for a guy like you, though, man, like, there's great groove in that. Like, I feel like every good record needs a good groove to start off, and, like, the rest is easy, you know.
Totally, I totally agree. I think that's also about going from where your influences are, though, right?
And
like, even the, like, old techno, some, like, super old techno records, it was all played. Like, the keys were played, the chords, like, in the Detroit, like, original Detroit techno, like, with the chords, like, they were just played. They weren't, like, sequenced in. You couldn't sequence in the
middle. Yeah, no, yeah.
Like Omar S is like one of my favorite producers. And Mr. G as well.
Mr. G is no joke.
And like, let's say for instance, like Mr. G, I know that all of that stuff's literally just done on hardware and he's just putting the mixer in and out and muting it. And like, that's
badass shit, man. That's how they used to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, lower the ride, slam it back in, like all that shit. That's fun stuff. I would love to get more into live recording like that.
Yeah.
A lot going on though. I don't think it, not that I can't handle it. I feel like you need someone there in the studio with you though to kind of help navigate.
I think it's about simplicity in those situations. Like if you listen to the old stuff, it was literally like four elements.
Yeah. That's why I like guys like Robert Hood.
Yeah.
Like Robert Hood's probably one of my top three.
Have you met him?
No, I met him 2 years ago in New York. We played a festival called Gather.
Yeah.
With the top four guys. And I met him and I was like, dude,
I want to meet him. I live in Detroit as well. And I really want to meet him.
Yeah, no, I remember you. You were there. And he doesn't live in Detroit anymore. He lives in Alabama.
Oh, does he? Did he move?
Yeah, I believe so. I think he lives in Alabama.
His floor plan project with his daughter.
Yeah.
So good.
So cool, man.
And I take huge influence from them.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Huge. They
have one record, Tell Me No Lie.
Oh, man.
Fucking killer record. So like, good. That's sampled from a group called Brainstorm. Loving is really the game.
Yeah.
It's an Frisco record and it's like 140 BPM, really so quick. Good.
Yeah.
And the sample they took was from a redone version.
Mm.
And they fucking cut that sample too well. Like, really good.
I'll have to send you a new record that I've done.
Yeah.
I'll send it to you after. But the way they make their records is just
I think he's still like mostly analog. Like you could definitely do that, or he's got some really good emulators that are just fucking sick.
Do you do much in hardware?
Recently, because of my situation, like my sister moving back home and with her puppies and stuff, I haven't sat in my studio in probably about a month or 3 weeks, 4 weeks maybe. I've been pumping everything out on my laptop, but I'm pretty damn good at just pumping shit right through my laptop. But when I sit in that studio and I turn on all my hardware, there's just something special that happens that like you can't get out of a laptop. And my dad was big into studio gear and he had a wedding band for a long time, so he had all the analog keyboards from the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. So
does he still have them?
I have a decent amount of his stuff downstairs. It's I have his Yamaha DX7, his Korg EX8000, his VFX and Sonic VFX, and the Akai AX80.
Nice.
Which is pretty, they're all pretty dope. And I just bought the new Korg Minilog too.
Yeah, I've got that there.
Yeah, the black one. Yeah. I love that thing.
It's great.
I think it's killer. And then I have a Nordli 2 and a Triton, Korg Triton.
Yeah.
Up there. And like, yeah, man, like I don't like to turn them all on and just start going off on if my project for the day is like, all right, let me turn on my Nord, let me see what I get on my Nordli. Yeah. And if I could just keep running the sounds, keep tweaking, and then by the time I know, I'd have a record. And I think sound quality wise, there's just something that with analog that just cuts through. Those the tubes just, they cut through so much better than in the box. But
yeah,
I'm not one of those guys that's like an analog purist. I've gotten a great sound out of my laptop too.
You also have to get work done, and I think the thing with analog is that it actually slows things down.
Oh, it definitely slows down a lot of my albums, my analog stuff, like the lead track It's called In My Mind. It has vocals on it. A lot of that was analog. I made sure, like, when I was writing my album, that I turned on my gear and I got the most out of, like, what I wanted. But yeah, man, I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh fuck, you only got to go analog. You know what I mean? That's complete bullshit these days.
Yeah,
it's too many good plugins out right now.
I'd love to do like a project where it is just analog, and that's purely just as like a tool, as like a kind of a exercise to like, okay, don't touch anything in the box, just jam and see what you can make.
Yeah. No, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
That's like to just see where it goes.
Yeah.
You know. But dude, gear can get challenging sometimes.
So annoying.
Down on you, you're fucked. You know what I mean? Like that's scary stuff too.
Yeah, super shit. Dude, I think we need to talk about pizza.
Oh yeah, we definitely do.
Here we go. So you make pizza?
Yeah, man. Actually during quarantine. So a lot of people don't know, but I own a production company as well with my partner. Since we're 12, we own the production company, like just lighting, sound, rentals, stuff like that.
Cool.
So like when everything hit, me and him were like, yo, what the fuck do we do?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not touring. Our business is
dead.
Fucked.
Yeah.
What do we do? So we started a mobile pizza trailer. And I taught him how to make pizza and my cousin making pizza. And we just got one of our boys who worked for a Michelin star restaurant for Thomas Keller.
Mm, wow.
He helps us out too. Yeah, he helps us out.
What did he do for Thomas Keller?
He was at the Tack Room in Manhattan.
Amazing.
It was in Hudson Yards in the city. Phenomenal restaurant. Yeah, man, we got a crew. We bought an oven on wheels, and it's been super busy. So like, what's that?
Do you go out on it?
If I'm not, if I'm home, it's my business. I'm always going to be around, you know, if I can do what I got to do and I'll go to the jobs, why not? You know what I mean? I enjoy making pizza. I think it's fun as fuck. So it's like, it's cool to have another asset that like when I'm touring and I'm not here and we have a few jobs going out, like my pride is still out there. Like it's a cool, you know, it's a cool thing. It's called CG Pizza. It's, in Italian, it's culo grosso, which means big ass in Italian. So it's a whole play on Italian American slang, and like we have a fig pie that we make, and it's called "How the Fig You Doing?" Like it's all like New York slang and Italian American slang that we just had fun with, and it turned into something. Every year for my birthday, if you're in the States, if you're in New York for August, I'll have you come over. It's a fucking,
I'm here. Fun time. I'm in the States.
Yeah, we throw a birthday party, and I make like 75 pizzas for everyone at my house, and that's how this started. We were like last year, we were like, let's do something fun. Like let's make this a mock restaurant. Like let's have fun with this, and we started doing some branding and started playing with logos and stuff like that. And then sure enough, man, we had a brand right in front of us and had no idea. And then my buddy Joe got called for a job. We know a girl that owns a sick ice cream truck. She makes like homemade cookie sandwiches and stuff like that. And she called my buddy Joe and she's like, hey, do you guys want to, you know, do a job for like 75 people in a backyard? And my buddy Joe was like, sure. And sure enough, bro, we fucking went out there. And I guess being from the event industry, we know how things work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We were able to figure everything out pretty quick. And you learn as you go. It's another business asset that I feel like will take me into the reins of owning a shop like down the line. I think as a DJ and an artist, I think it's always good to invest your money into other things that you could turn into more money and build a little empire. And I've just learned that from watching other people do their thing. You know, like, I think real estate's a great investment. Mm-hmm. I think having another business is a great investment to offset your touring. So like when you're touring and you have your restaurant going off and you got another business going off, you're making money on all ends, which is a great problem to have, you know? And then sure enough, when you're 50 something years old, you could take the gigs that you want to take.
Yeah.
You could make whatever music you want.
Yeah.
And you can go to your shop and do whatever you want to do. You could sell it. It's an asset, you know?
I totally agree. I don't think it's just about being an artist. I think it's just life. I think nowadays is like being able to find something that you absolutely love to do and have multiple things of that.
Yeah. So that's what it is. Like, I'm doing everything that I love to do.
That's that's the most.
You got the pizza business. You got my production company, which is great. We have guys that really run that shop, which is awesome. And then my tour life and my career, which is really like, I don't think anything will ever come close to the amount of passion that I have for my career and how much like things I want to do with my career.
Yeah.
But pizza is pretty damn close, man. And we got to figure it out pretty quick, which was awesome. It's funny. Dave Reset Robot hit me up and he was thinking about doing something too out by him. I was like, dude, you should totally do it. I'll give you all the pointers like that we started everything with. And he's like, yeah, man, we got to hop on a call. But he got really good at making pizza too. It's crazy.
He's really good. Like, we send each, because I bake bread as well. And
bro, I can't get that down for the life of me though, which is fucking hysterical.
I'll hook you up. I'll hook you up with the bread.
You do like a sourdough?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I tried to do the whole starter and like we had fun with it, but for pizza, I didn't like the flavor so much for sourdough.
Did you use cake yeast?
I use active yeast.
Yeah.
And we're about a 70% hydration on our dough. I only do a room ferment and I do a bulk for anywhere from 24 to 48 hours. Mm. And then I'll ball up probably 8 hours before we make pizza.
Do you have like big mixers? Are you doing it all in a big mixer?
Yeah, 60-quart mixer.
Yeah.
I have a 60-quart mixer. When you're in New York, bro, I can pick you up. You come down here.
Dude, I'd love to, man. I'd absolutely love to. Like 100%.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, that'd be fun.
What's your favorite pizza place in New York then?
Oh, I hate it. Because honestly, there's so many good ones.
Paulie G's is mine.
Paulie G's is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm a wood-fired guy, so I like a traditional New York style pizza. I'm gonna go with John's. I like John's on Bleecker. Mm-hmm. It's coal fired. The Ill Industry guys are really good in Brooklyn.
I've not been there.
Oh, oof, that's a good one.
It's a good.
But if you want to keep it classic to old school New York, I think DeFaris. Mm-hmm. You got what's it called? J&B. You got L&B in Brooklyn. You know what's funny though? I think Brooklyn has better pizza spots than the city.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The city's kind of oversaturated with that dollar slice shit. Right, like
Two Bros Pizza, shops. Baby.
Yeah, there's good shops, but like, there's Brooklyn has those spots where it's like, fuck, this is like, it's just, yeah, there's some legendary spots. I think DeFaris got me really good. DeFaris, there's the original owner that was making pizza there for like 50 years. He doesn't, Dom is his name, Dom DeMarco. He doesn't make the pizza anymore there, I don't think. But I waited 3 hours for a slice.
For a slice?
When he was there. And I waited 3 hours and it was fucking incredible.
It's fucking incredible to wait 3 hours for a slice.
Really good. There's another spot that's in the city, but he opened up a spot in Jersey as well. And his spot's called Una Pizza Napolitana. And the owner's name is Anthony Mangieri. He's a pizza legend, dude. Mm. This guy, he's more of like, he was a baker before he got into making pizza, but his topping game is next to none. Amazing. What he what he pairs is phenomenal ingredients. Like, he's getting real deal shit. I love his pizza. I think his topping game is better than like his crust and everything. Yeah. He's more of like a not as thin. He's a little more fluffy, and it's more about his technique.
Yeah.
That you're paying attention for. Mm. Like, you would probably like it because you like bread. You like to break like bread. But I like a little bit thinner pie, but I'm a Neapolitan style guy. I like Neapolitan.
Classic.
But nothing beats a good classic New York slice.
Yeah, I agree.
A cheesy.
Walking down the street.
Nothing beats that good slice.
Nothing
man.
Beats it. And it's like bigger than your face. And it's just fucking amazing, man.
Nope.
Dude, I'm out in July the 24th. I'm playing Mirage.
Okay.
Cool. And I think I'm going to come for like a few days before.
All right.
So cool. we've got to do some pizza tours. Yeah.
We got to do it.
Dude, we've just done over an hour. Let's wrap this motherfucker up. But before we go, how can people follow you? How can people listen to your music and things like that?
So it's at Avision on Instagram. And I think Spotify is Avision as well. And then SoundCloud is Avision Official.
Sick, man. Dude, thank you so much for your music. Thank you for coming on. See you July the 10th in LA.
Yeah. We'll see you soon, bro.
Keep safe, man. See you soon.
Yo, tell us, bro. Peace. Be good.
And that is a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Hit subscribe. Tell your mates about it. Give us a little comment if you want. Thank you so much. Keep safe. See you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.